Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of the station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Tired of traditional talk? People pontificating about this or that, the left or the right. Sometimes the truth is just all lost in the noise. Having learned life lessons the hard way, Chuck Gallagher, international speaker and author, cuts through the noise to share truth through transparency. Nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. So tune in, turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Now, here's your host, Chuck Gallagher.
Well, we are in for a ride today here on Straight Talk Radio. Hi, this is Chuck Gallagher. And well, we're here to discuss issues and ideas that can transform your life. But every choice has a consequence. Those are powerful words and true. And I have to say, as we start this show, I knew the difference between right and wrong, ethical and unethical, but took what, well, seemed at the time the easy way out, only to find that I created more problems for myself than I could have ever imagined. Boy, I wish then I knew what I knew now, or better still, I wish I had been introduced early on to my next guest, the ethics guy. Bruce Weinstein is one of the nation's leading experts when it comes to human behavior and ethics. Dr. Weinstein, but now I'm going to call him Bruce, has the kind of career that most people aspire to. He's the author of a best-selling book, Ethical Intelligence, and has literally spoken to audiences worldwide. Bruce helps organizations focus on what is truly important, helping them untangle their toughest problems at work and beyond. So today, to help us answer those pesky ethical questions, I'd like to welcome my friend and guest, Bruce Weinstein, the ethics guy. Bruce, welcome.
Great to be here, Chuck.
You know, it is my honor to have you on the show. I'm really so excited about this show. And I'd love to start our conversation about your book, Ethical Intelligence. But first, I've got to ask, how and when did you come up with your trademark, the ethics guy?
Well, I moved to New York in 1999 from Jacksonville, Florida, and I had two objectives. One was to meet my soulmate, and the other was to become a force in the culture for talking about ethics and reflecting about ethical issues in everyday life. And at the time that I came up, there was a column in the New York Times, and in fact, it still runs, but it had been launched in the late 90s, and it was called The Ethicist, which is the fancy word for what I do. But it's a rather highfalutin term, and most people, I would guess, don't know what it is and probably wouldn't know how to pronounce it. In fact, I was once introduced as an ethicist because it's, you know, C-I-S-T, and I guess
right,
that's a reasonable
okay.
pronunciation. So I thought, well, how can I do what the New York Times is doing for its audience but for a much broader audience? And of course, I greatly respect what the New York Times does, but I wanted to be a populist version of that. So I thought, well, the ethics guy kind of captures that. And I thought, my name isn't easy to remember or pronounce. And so I thought, if I call myself the ethics guy and a television station or a network or radio network wants to book me, they might not remember to book Bruce Weinstein, but they might say, get the ethics guy on here. And in fact, that's exactly what happened because a friend of mine was a producer for The O'Reilly Factor, and he told me that when he was at Fox News, his boss would say, book the ethics guy for the next show without knowing what my name was, but remembering that, you know, I had been on. So it's worked well, and I trademarked it. And so anytime somebody in the United States uses it unknowingly, I call them and say, please don't do that. In fact, you can't do it because I own the trademark to that term. And I've actually made a lot of friends that way. I've created some new colleagues by doing that.
Well, I'm sure you have. And you know, it is brilliant when you think about marketing and how we connect in the world to have something that is that clear. You're the ethics guy. And Bruce, I've got to tell you now, I think you kind of did it backwards, though. You went from Florida to New York. I mean, isn't it normally the reverse?
Well, you know, a lot of people come to New York to reinvent themselves. And I had been a professor in West Virginia and had a really fine career there. But I wanted the world to be my classroom. And so I had a detour there for a while, making a documentary film, and decided to get back into the fray of teaching ethics, and went on the lecture circuit, where, of course, I kept hearing your name. And at most of the conferences I've been to, you've either just presented there or are about to present there or presented there last year. So you and I have crisscrossed without actually meeting in person.
Well, we have crisscrossed a bit, and your name comes up a lot. And again, I love the brand. But you wrote a book called Ethical Intelligence, which I think is it's a captivating title. Because, you know, we're obviously dealing in the world of what is ethical behavior and how do intelligent people make that. So first, let's start a little bit by telling me your motivation to write that book.
There's a popular book called Emotional Intelligence. And one of the struggles that I've had in talking about ethics in public and, you know, in person and on television and radio is that the term is really off-putting to people. And when you hear the word ethics in the paper or, you know, hear it on the news or whatever, what is it normally associated with, the term ethics?
Well, normally what you end up hearing in the news, unfortunately, is someone screwing up somehow.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Making unethical choices.
The word that normally follows ethics or ethical is violation. So it's linked in the public consciousness to bad behavior, to wrongful conduct, to wrongdoing. Somebody did something they shouldn't have done. And that's certainly part of what ethics is about, but it's also about good people making the best possible choices and good people trying to figure out how to be the most honorable person, people they can be. So with that in mind, I thought I'm going to try to downplay the word ethics and play up the idea of this being a smart way to live. And so the term emotional intelligence has been in our culture for a while, and I thought a nice complementary notion to emotional intelligence would be ethical intelligence. And like Daniel Goleman, who popularized emotional intelligence, he did not invent that term. I did not invent ethical intelligence, but I'm trying to popularize it. And so instead of referring to an action or a choice as ethical or unethical, I'll ask an audience, is this the most ethically intelligent choice you could make?
Okay, that makes sense. And in the book, you have a lot of examples, some business examples, obviously, but I get the clear impression that the principles that apply to work and business also apply to work in your personal life.
And it's a great observation, Chuck. And in fact, as I can't claim ownership or authorship of the term ethical intelligence, the five principles that I talk about in the book, which we can get into in a moment, but I didn't come up with those either. And what they are is a more accessible formulation of principles that are used in a classic book in bioethics or medical ethics that was promulgated by one of my professors at Georgetown and a book that he wrote for Oxford University Press called Principles of Biomedical Ethics is a classic in the field. But it refers to, for example, the first principle of biomedical ethics in the book is the principle of non-maleficence. And that's a term that other philosophers know, but probably not a lot of people outside of academics know or understand what that means. And all it means, it's just a Latin word for do no harm.
Right.
So I took the book's principle of non-maleficence and reframed it as the do no harm principle. And I took it outside of medicine because it applies not just to physicians and dentists and clinical social workers, but to talk show hosts and producers of talk show programs like Jessica and just about everybody, really. In fact, I asked a group of eighth graders recently, when you hear the phrase do no harm, what group of people do you normally associate it with? And a kid raised his hand and he said, hippies.
Okay.
And another kid raised his hand and said, vegetarians. And then a teacher who's in the back of the room said, police officers. And I agree, it do no harm applies to physicians and nurses and social workers and hippies and vegetarians and police officers and talk show hosts and everybody else.
So with the few minutes that we have left in this segment, let's start with do no harm and give me some quick examples of how you see that playing out in life.
Well, it happens every day, especially in New York, when a common way of greeting people is to insult them or their mother. And outside of New York, that actually is offensive behavior. Here in New York, when you do that, it's just another way of saying I care. But a lot of people still take offense at insults, especially insults about someone's mother. And what's the natural tendency? What's the natural response when somebody insults you?
Well, most
or curses at you while you're driving down the highway.
Yeah, and most of the time you become defensive, and yes. And that brings up feelings of anger and other things.
And what kind of behavior does it prompt?
Well, it doesn't prompt ethical behavior. It prompts more of an attack, really.
Absolutely. Someone insults you, you're going to insult them right back. In fact, in the movie The Untouchables, I'm reminded here when Sean Connery tells Kevin Costner, if somebody assaults you with a baseball bat, you come at them with a gun or a knife. That's the Chicago way. So not only do you return like for like, you go one step above it or below it, however, whatever your perspective is. So the do no harm principle in that context, when someone insults you on the street or while you're driving, is to do nothing. It's a principle of restraint. And the reason it makes a lot of sense when you're driving is because if you return like for like, if you respond the Chicago way, like what Sean Connery is talking about, what's going to be the consequence? I mean, as you rightly point out in your talks and in your books, actions have consequences. What will be the consequence of responding with an insult to someone if you're driving on the highway?
And Bruce, let's it's hard to do this, but
a cliffhanger.
The cliffhanger is what is that response? As we go to break here with Straight Talk Radio, this is Chuck Gallagher with my guest, Bruce Weinstein, the ethics guy. So we'll be back in just a few minutes to find out what that consequence is and talk about the other four principles in his new book, Ethical Intelligence. Join me in just a few moments.
Used clinically by top Lyme doctors, Beyond Balance herbal formulas have helped thousands of patients battle tick-borne disease by providing superior immune system support and enhancing detoxification. Beyond Balance formulas are sold through healthcare professionals. The oral drops contain non-GMO food-grade vegetable glycerin, making them well-tolerated by children and alcohol-sensitive patients. For more information, licensed or certified healthcare practitioners can call BioResource, the exclusive Beyond Balance distributor for the United States and Canada, 800-203-3775.
Tired of traditional talk? People pontificating about this or that, the left or the right. Sometimes the truth is just all lost in the noise. Tune in each week to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher on TransformationTalkRadio.com, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, as nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. Tune in and turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Visit ChuckGallagher.com for more information.
Listen to the Yo Andrew News talk show every Tuesday night at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. More info where to listen? www.yoandrewnts.com/listen. Don't get your message lost in the mail. Email us with this address, yoandrew@yoandrewnts.com. How about tweet Yo Andrew at AndrewTweetGeo? Taking a picture is easy. Instagram us today at yoandrewnts.
And this is Chuck Gallagher. We're coming back from the break with Straight Talk Radio, and I have my guest with me, Bruce Weinstein, known as the Ethics Guy. Bruce is a best-selling author. We've been talking about his book, Ethical Intelligence, and we've really got some interesting things that have come up. But Bruce helps organizations focus on what is truly important. He is a gentleman that speaks literally nationwide, and it's my honor to have Bruce. Now, Bruce, before we broke, we were talking about your book, and one of the first principles of the five principles you list is do no harm. And we were at this cliffhanger. What happens whenever someone responds in a negative way? So take it from there.
Well, I pose a scenario. Suppose you're driving along the highway and someone speeds ahead of you and turns to you and curses. And I asked, what's the natural response to that? Well, for a lot of people, probably most people, the natural response is to curse and to get angry and to respond in kind. But the problem with doing that on the highway is that you're increasing the risk of an accident because you're temporarily losing control of the vehicle. And if you're with a child or anybody, I mean, you're increasing the risk of harm to yourself, to the people around you, and to your passengers. So the do no harm principle says, just as difficult as it is, and it is hard, to restrain that impulse, to do nothing.
And that makes sense. And I guess, you know, for those that want maybe a biblical perspective, it's turn the other cheek. It's just accept the fact that wherever someone is doing to you, do no harm back to them. And I love the principles that you have, but another of the five principles is make things better. And okay, so I've got to ask, though it maybe isn't making things better, isn't that relative to the object or the person? Because what is better for some may not be better for others.
In some respects, that's true. But, you know, most people want to be able to eat and put clothes on their backs and feed their families and to make a difference in the world. I think the idea of doing better in life is a goal that many of us have, and we understand better in a broad sense, I think, pretty much the same way. But certainly, for you, making things better at home, or say with your hobbies, might mean, well, what do you do for a hobby, Chuck?
I'm a pilot. I like to fly.
Okay, now that would make things worse for me because I hate to fly. So that's a great example. Do you like hard rock music?
I like rock music. I don't know how hard we want to make it, but okay. I like rock music. You know, well, look, I'm 56. I go back to the 70s. When people sing about love and joy and, you know, let the sun shine in, for goodness sake.
Is that something you like or don't like?
Oh, no, I like it. That's good.
Because, I mean, so let's say that music about peace and love might be, you know, buying a CD or downloading an album of that might make things better for you. But for other people, it might be something that's about as pleasant as dental surgery without anesthesia. But your point's well taken. The thing about the make things better principle, well, there are two things. First of all, the law requires us not to harm people. So right. The first principle of ethical intelligence, do no harm, is rooted both in the law and in ethics. But the law doesn't require us to make things better. The law doesn't require us to use our knowledge and skills to make a positive difference in the lives of others. But ethics does. Ethics asks for more of us than the law does. And the other point that's worth mentioning is that, well, you've been on a plane, right?
Oh, of course.
You're on a plane all the time. At the beginning of the flight, the flight attendant will say, in the event of the loss of cabin pressure, oxygen masks will drop down. And if you're with a small child, you should help the small child first, right? Because that makes things better for the child.
So I get that. What then?
It's a trick question.
Well, actually, if I remember correctly, they say place the mask on yourself first.
That's
so
right.
That you're
exactly.
Able to help the child.
And why do they say that? Why, even if you're with a child, why should you put the mask on yourself before you help a child?
Well, in reality, if you lose cabin pressure, you have seconds to be able to recoup the oxygen. And since the child is incapable of making those decisions, the adult has to be conscious to do that.
Right. So if you're not in a good shape yourself, you're in no position to help other people.
That's true.
So that's true. The make things better principle applies not just to how you treat other people, but how you treat yourself. And I think this is the missing piece in most discussions about ethics. We tend to think of ethics as having to do with our responsibilities to other people. But it also applies to how we treat ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think if more people recognize that, it would not only be not an off-putting topic, it would be something that we would embrace.
You know, Bruce, one of the things, and I'll say this, it's really somewhat confusing to me, because making things better seems to be the principle at the core of the debate in Washington between the two political parties. And they seem to be worlds apart on what that means. Because to...
May I interrupt here?
Yes, please.
I'm sorry, I just have to get in here, because this often comes up in the Q&As. And the way that Washington exists now and the way that it's run for a long time has nothing to do with ethical principles. And it has to do with politics in the worst and most perverse sense of the term, which is who maintains power.
Right.
Politics used to be about, in classical times, it was about how to use power and influence to enrich the lives of the people you're representing. Now what it means is enriching the lives of yourself, the politician. And so I don't think that ethics plays a role at all in modern political discourse.
It should. And it's probably the unfortunate thing is I believe, maybe I'm wrong, that the population in general would like to see ethics play a central role in political discourse.
Absolutely.
And yet, for whatever reason,
how many times, Chuck, are you asked when you're on the road, how many times does someone say, oh, you talk about ethics, you need to go to Washington?
Oh, that happens all the time.
All the time. And let me ask you this. With all the clients you have, how many of your clients are in the local, state, or federal government?
Well, let's put it this way. There are some, and one state, an association of counties hired me, and they did so because their state has the highest incarceration rate of elected officials in the union, and they felt like they needed to do something drastic to try to keep that from taking place.
And it's the trade, but it was a trade association that hired you, not the government itself.
That's true. That is absolutely true.
And yet, the government hires lots of different kinds of contractors and vendors, but not us yet.
No, not us yet. And, you know, perhaps the problem with hiring someone like you or myself, whomever, to come in is if you apply your principles, those principles will fly in the face of amassing power. And that's where the problem then tends to be.
In the short term, that might be true because, for example, campaign finance reform, the reason why that's never going to happen is because it's not in the interest of the people voting on it to change it.
Correct.
Because they would have to limit the amount of money that they get from PACs and super PACs that keep them in power. So, but in the long run, they would be doing themselves a favor because the people they represent would like what they're doing and keep them in office.
Exactly.
Did you see that movie Bullworth by Warren Beatty in the late 90s?
No, I don't think so.
It's a wonderful film. Unfortunately, not a lot of people know about it. It's a comedy. And the premise is, suppose a politician told the truth.
Okay.
And it is a comedy because with that premise, it has to be comedic, right? But it shows that, in fact, good things can happen from that, although ultimately in this film it didn't. But people are so surprised when someone in that position tells the truth, they don't know what to make of it.
Right. Well, it does seem to be telling the truth, being honest, being fair, respecting others, which, by the way, is your third principle. So before we go to break, let's talk about principle number three, respecting others, and some practical examples of how you see that playing out in folks' lives.
There are three ways that we can apply the principle of respect in everyday life: by keeping confidential things confidential, by telling the truth, and by keeping our promises. Do we have time to go into any detail?
Actually, we can. And the first one, you were talking about keeping things confidential. And I have to say, I'm always humored when someone comes up to you and says, you know, Bruce, I need to talk to you and let me share something with you confidentially, because fundamentally, there's a pretty good idea that out in the workplace somewhere, someone else is sharing something confidentially. And the next thing you know, there's nothing confidential, but everybody thinks they're being confidential.
The only way to keep a secret is never to tell anybody.
Isn't that the truth?
Hard to do.
I was
in a hospital elevator once, and I overheard two physicians talking about a patient. They mentioned the patient's full name, and they mentioned that he had just had a quintuple bypass procedure. And it was hard not to hear them, you know, in an elevator. But what these physicians probably didn't know is that I knew who they were talking about, but I didn't know that fella was ill.
Right. And so in that circumstance, okay, so here you are, you're in an elevator, you hear two physicians talking about someone that you by chance happen to know, and you know, based on the Privacy Act and just respecting others, that conversation shouldn't be taking place in a public place. So what does one do in that circumstance?
There's a technique I learned while I was a professor that's really helpful whenever you need to help someone get back on track or respect confidential information, or simply when you have to give criticism to someone. It's called the praise sandwich, and it has three elements. It begins by saying something complimentary, flattering even, to someone, such as if I had had the courage to do this back then, I could have said something like, Dr. Smith, Dr. Jones, and I would have done this privately, not in front of other people in the elevator. I might have said, Dr. Smith, Dr. Jones, I just want you to know that it's a pleasure serving with you on the Institutional Ethics Committee. I really respect what you do. Now, assuming that's sincere, what effect will it have on Dr. Smith and Dr. Jones?
Well, certainly they should feel a positive connection with you because of the compliment you've paid them.
They'll like me and they'll want to hear more. Now comes the criticism. Now you stick it to them, but not in a way that feels like criticism. So a thing not to say would be, how dare you for violating patients' right to confidentiality, and you should know better, and blah, blah, blah. That will throw their defenses up, and they'll shut down, and they'll tell you to get lost, or words to that effect. If, however, I would have said something like, I'm sure you're not aware of it, giving them the benefit of the doubt, but I overheard what you were talking about, and I wonder if I could hear it. Maybe other patients could too. Maybe family members could hear it. That's the criticism. Then you end with praise, something like, and I hope you'll take what I'm saying to heart. Again, it's an honor to serve with you, and thank you so much for hearing me out. Praise, criticism, praise.
Praise, criticism, praise. And with that, we're going to take another break. My guest is Bruce Weinstein. He is the ethics guy, and we're talking about his book, Emotional Intelligence, and
Ethical
Intelligence. Gosh, you had me hooked on the other one now that you mentioned that. You planted
that guy
that in
sold
my mind.
Books. Now let's we need to get some of mine out there.
Not a problem. My fault. Ethical intelligence. In any event, we're going to be back with Bruce. We're going to talk about several more of the principles, principle number 4, and then talk about his other book, which I think you'll find fascinating. So stay with me. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio.
Where do you desire to go in your life? Are you only looking outside yourself for the answers? What if you use your soul's wisdom to lead the way? So what is the soul, and how do you access its wisdom? Soul Suitcase with Victoria Cohen will unpack these questions and help you tap into and trust your own inner voice to solve everyday problems. Our Soul Suitcase is a treasure chest of wisdom inside us waiting to be discovered. Listen to Soul Suitcase while Victoria Cohen takes everyday situations like job loss, relationship struggles, parenting challenges, work stress, and health concerns, and shows you how awakening to your inner voice helps you make more conscious choices where your life flows more smoothly with greater clarity, purpose, grace, and ease. As a psychotherapist and soul coach, Victoria has inspired thousands of clients over the past 31 years to listen to their inner wisdom and let it guide them on their true path. You can learn this too on Soul Suitcase with Victoria Cohen. Your soul suitcase is packed. Are you ready to start your journey?
Used clinically by top Lyme doctors, Beyond Balance herbal formulas have helped thousands of patients battle tick-borne disease by providing superior immune system support and enhancing detoxification. Beyond Balance formulas are sold through healthcare professionals. The oral drops contain non-GMO food-grade vegetable glycerin, making them well-tolerated by children and alcohol-sensitive patients. For more information, licensed or certified healthcare practitioners can call BioResource, the exclusive Beyond Balance distributor for the United States and Canada, 800-203-3775.
Hello, my name is Dr. Friedman Schaub. Anxiety can attack or creep up on us at the most inopportune moments, which makes us feel powerless and out of control. However, anxiety is a basic feeling that is created by our mind. Understanding some do's and don'ts about anxiety is a first step to demystify this emotion and regain control. The more we know about a challenge, the more we can find ways to overcome it.
Tap into your I Am energy to discover who you truly are and who you always have been. Dawn Smith offers a simple yet profound and life-changing way to discover your I Am energy that is hidden beneath the toxicity caused by choices we made consciously or unconsciously prior to today. This internal perfection is not an idea, a theory, or some vague notion or concept. On the contrary, it is beyond the grasp of the brain and its intellectual interpretations, as it lies deep within the language of our hearts. Visit iamenergy.ca.
Hi, this is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. And if you're just joining us, my guest is Bruce Weinstein, the ethics guy, an international speaker and author, and a man who is everywhere when it comes to ethics and ethical behavior. He is a contributor to the Huffington Post and Bloomberg Business Week. And Bruce and I have been talking about his book, Ethical Intelligence. And by the way, let me mention that you can take Bruce's ethics quiz or sign up for his weekly ethics newsletter or book him to speak to your group by going to theethicsguy.com, theethicsguy.com. And look, I've got to tell you, I took the quiz. I scored well, Bruce, but I took the quiz and it was really kind of fun. And it was a great series of questions that really caused you to think a little bit about what in reality would you do if anything. But in talking about your book, one of the things that we've done is you have identified that there are five principles. The last one we talked about was respecting others, but the fourth principle is be fair. And so help me define fair, because it seems so much of life is about opposites, winning versus losing, success versus failure. So how do you find fair in that mix?
You often hear people say life isn't fair. And when they say that, they're referring to a couple of things. First of all, let's say that you become ill for whatever reason. It's hard to see how that is a fair thing to do to you or to have done to you, especially if you've made good choices, healthy choices throughout your life. But I use the term fairness with respect to the choices that we make toward one another. So to be fair is to give to others their due. And there are several ways that we do that. How we allocate, for example, scarce resources, how we allocate our time. Time management is something that's often presented as a business or strategic issue, and it certainly has a strategic component, but ultimately it's an ethical one. Because if you give so much of your time to one area of your life, let's say your work, that you're not able to meet your responsibilities to your family and your friends and yourself, that's not unfortunate, that's unfair, and therefore ethically unintelligent. And probably something that everybody listening to this can relate to, how we punish or discipline other people says a lot about how fair we are as human beings.
That's interesting. You know, I have to say, I can't remember the first time I have heard people talk about fairness in ethical terms, especially when it comes to time and discipline. I'm kind of curious. Let's get on the discipline route. Fair discipline versus non-fair.
Yes. Well, let me ask you this. When you've had to discipline or punish someone in your life, Chuck, what prompted that? But you don't have to give a specific example, but what was the situation that gave rise to your having to punish or discipline someone?
Well, I'll tell you kind of a funny story related to that. The one that really sticks out in my mind was my 4-year-old. Now, this was a long time ago, Bruce, but he was sitting in the back seat of the car in his little car seat, and he wouldn't sit still. He wouldn't pay attention. He wouldn't be quiet. He was just going crazy. And I tried reasoning and so forth to try to get or elicit appropriate behavior. Eventually, I'm not saying I'm proud of this, but eventually I got really frustrated and just reached around and popped him on the leg to try to get his attention. And I have to admit, after that, I kind of felt bad. And so I went to McDonald's to get him a Happy Meal. Parental, the parental feeling of guilt. And a cop pulls in behind me and hits his lights. And I'm like, what in the world? And seems like, now you got to remember, this is a long, long time ago when cell phones just came out. It seems like somebody saw me pop the kid in the car and called me in for child abuse.
Oh, boy.
So the cop pulls me over, of course, looks at the license and registration, and then looks at the kid in the back seat. Then I can see my four-year-old now, who is very mischievous, saying, oh, yes, he beats me all the time. Fortunately, he didn't do that. But that was the – most of the time, the incidents – long story to make short – the incidents of disciplining someone is because they have done something that is either – not in their best interest or not in the set of rules that are established to be followed for a particular behavior.
Or that just plain annoy you.
Well, that's true too.
So when somebody else does something that we feel they shouldn't be doing or that we don't want them to be doing, what is the natural response to that? It's to be upset, to be angry. And so in thinking about your response and popping your child on the leg, would you say that that was an appropriate response to what he was doing?
Well, you know, probably not. In reality, by that point, he had probably irritated me and made me angry enough that I was willing to take a more aggressive approach.
Yes. So what you were doing, and it's understandable, what you were doing is allowing your emotion, anger, frustration,
right,
to determine what you did. And the challenge in being fair in punishing or disciplining someone is to harness that emotion and to channel it appropriately so that we don't allow it to create outcomes that are inappropriate or unfair.
Okay, that makes sense.
There's an excellent, by the way, are you a fan of the Andy Griffith Show as I am?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
There's a wonderful episode called Opie Wins a Medal, and I highly recommend it. It's in season two. I highly recommend it to your listeners as an example of how to discipline or punish someone appropriately by using your anger appropriately. It's a wonderful example of how to do that, and I often show that to kids. And one of my friends who's about 10 years older than I am said, Bruce, you should not show the Andy Griffith Show to, you know, 8-year-olds, 10-year-olds. That would be like us seeing films from the 20s or 30s when we were growing up as lessons. Well, of course, as a film lover, I would have liked that. But his point's well taken. And yet the Andy Griffith Show is so well made, so well written, and so well scripted, so well acted, produced, that even something that's slow and black and white and 50, 60 years old still holds their attention. Amazing.
Yeah. It is. And while we're here, I want to go to your last principle before we start talking about your work with kids. But the last principle is be loving. And okay, so let's see. I'm not trying to be funny here, but I can almost hear some of our listeners saying, really? Loving? I mean, do you know how hard it is to love some of those folks? And I guess some people probably think be loving is kind of frou-frou. So
it is frou-frou, and that's why I don't use it any longer. I mean, the trouble with doing a book is that once it's out there, it's kind of it's a snapshot of the way you thought at the time you wrote it, but it's incapable of changing in response to feedback. So what I learned after writing this and putting it out there is that, like you say, the term loving is frou-frou, and I don't want to be – I mean, I have nothing against it. But as a business ethics speaker, I don't want anybody shutting down because they don't like the word. So the term I use now is to be caring, to be kind, to be compassionate. And it essentially means the same thing. It
right,
plays out in the same way.
And
without running the risk of being accused of being frou-frou. Not that there's anything wrong with it.
Oh, well,
I don't want to be seen. I don't want anybody shutting me down as
right,
an audience member because they don't like the word I'm using.
And it makes more sense, it does, to say,
yes,
I'm going to be compassionate and I'm going
yes,
to be caring. Because mm-hmm, most of us would like to feel like that if we were facing a challenging circumstance in life, that someone would be compassionate and caring.
Absolutely.
Now,
had I known that then that I know now, then it would have. But when I teach now, that's how I put the fifth principle, to be caring or just to care.
Gotcha. Now, you know, you and I often speak about ethics in business. And so before we go to our next break, what do you see as the landscape regarding ethical action in business today?
I'm often asked, what is the most pressing ethical issue that businesses face today or that people face? And hands down, it's the use and abuse of technology. And you can see this anywhere from at the most severe level, national security being compromised. But on a day-to-day, more practical level that all of us can relate to is multitasking, not being able to focus while we're driving. Every day when someone calls me, I have to ask them, are you behind the wheel? I can hear a low roar in the background. Yes, but I'm using a hands-free device. But you're still four times more likely to be involved in a car accident if you talk with someone while you're driving. So that's an example I think that everybody can relate to. But there's so many more that involve technology, its uses and abuses, and as you always remind us, rightly so, the consequences of that abuse.
Yeah, it is amazing what technology brings. It brings us the ability to come together via Skype for this radio show, which is wonderful. But I do recall you and I talked a couple of weeks ago, and the first question you asked me is, are you in your car driving? I said yes, and you said, let's schedule another time to talk, and there's a reason for that, and now that becomes crystal clear because obviously it's not in my best interest to do that, and even though I wasn't willing to see that, you were, and I appreciate you for that.
You're very kind.
One last quick question before we go to our last segment. Do you think as a society we have a greater focus on ethical action, or is there less a focus?
Just as with everything else, there seems to be more of everything in our culture. I mean, 25 years ago, there weren't folks on the lecture circuit or in newspapers or certainly online at the time talking about ethics. But now we have the Kardashians with their own reality show, and we have every possible reality show on every network. So there's a lot of everything now in our culture. And the challenge for us, I think, in wanting to stimulate discussion and reflection on ethics is to rise above the din, is to get above the noise and to help people appreciate why it's in their own interest to think about some of these things.
Well, to help folks get above the noise, my guest is Bruce Weinstein, the ethics guy. And let me encourage you listeners to go to theethicsguy.com and take Bruce's ethics quiz. I promise the quiz, it doesn't take long. It's a great quiz with questions that are thought-provoking. And Bruce, as a contributor to the Huffington Post and Bloomberg Business Week, is an international speaker and author when it comes to ethics. So we've been talking about his book, Ethical Intelligence, but when we come back from the break, we are going to talk about another book. And the title of that is It's Still Cheating If I Don't Get Caught. So stick with me. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio.
Tired of traditional talk? People pontificating about this or that, the left or the right. Sometimes the truth is just all lost in the noise. Tune in each week to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher on TransformationTalkRadio.com, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, as nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. Tune in and turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Visit ChuckGallagher.com for more information.
Did you know that Lyme disease is one of the fastest growing infectious diseases in America? In 2013, the CDC raised its estimates to nearly 300,000 new Lyme disease cases annually, a nearly tenfold increase. Lyme disease is a truly national epidemic and a real health crisis. The Tick-Borne Disease Alliance, the TBDA, is leading the fight against Lyme disease. They are funding the research for improved diagnostics and better treatments. They are making great strides on behalf of the Lyme community. But they need your help to expand their research and advocacy efforts. Please support TBDA in its fight against Lyme disease. Millions of Lyme sufferers are counting on it.
Thank you for sticking with us here on Straight Talk Radio. This is Chuck Gallagher, and boy, have we been having some fun in this show. My guest is Bruce Weinstein, the ethics guy. He is a contributor to the Huffington Post, Bloomberg Business Week, and international speaker and author, and is the author of a book called Ethical Intelligence. And look, I've said this a couple of times, but I'm going to reiterate it. Go to his website, theethicsguy.com, and take his ethics quiz. This is one of those things where you might want to take it. You also might want to have some family members take it. The questions are really cool, and it really puts you into a state of thinking about the choices that we make in life. Now, Bruce, in our last segment, I noticed something, and it's similar to me in the same way that both of us as speakers tend to also find that we will speak to groups of young people. And you wrote a book for youth. The title of it I love, Is It Still Cheating If I Don't Get Caught? So tell me a little bit about the motivation behind this book.
I wish I could say that I came up with the idea for a children's book myself. Like a lot of people, I've in the back of my mind always thought about writing a children's book on the false assumption that it would be easier. It's harder, actually, to write for children. But U.S. Airways magazine had done a profile of me when I was when I had a weekly segment on CNN, and a publisher read it and won and landed and then called my agent and offered me the opportunity to write this book. And it was really hard to write. And the only way I could keep sane during it was to play polka music. So anytime I hear polka music now, I think about writing that book. But I'm pleased to say that it's been translated into Chinese. And it's,
wow. That's a big market.
It's the toughest audience in a way because unlike adults, they will just, if they're not interested, they'll just get up and leave. But unlike adults in a positive way, they speak their mind. They're willing to answer any question you put to them. They're full of life. They're not checking their phones because in schools, they're not allowed to have the phones with them. So there's just there's a vitality and an energy and a crackle in the air when I have the privilege of speaking to young people, and it's a blast, and they really take to this. In fact, parents usually get the book first, read it themselves, talk about it with their kids, and there are a couple of schools that have built learning plans around it.
You know, that's really cool because one of the challenges that I think we all face, but especially if you're the parent of young children, is how we start training our youth today to think before they make choices that can't be changed. I was speaking to a group of junior high kids about 4 weeks ago, and I knew the answer to the question, but I posed it anyway. I said, what's that social media app that, you know, you can take a picture and it deletes in like 10 seconds or so?
Snapchat?
And they all jumped up, Snapchat. And it's like, so what's the purpose behind that? And we got to talking about the choices that you make, and you know, the whole premise behind it is, well, you take a picture, but it disappears, so therefore there's no footprint or there's nothing left. But that's not necessarily true. There certainly may be something left if other people are taking pictures of the picture as it appears on the phone.
Or screen grab, you can take it, right? You can
absolutely
grab that screen image.
So I have to tell you, I was actually on an interview on a radio show, and one of the comments that came up was a call comes in, and dad's sitting on the couch. He's had a tough day. He's watching his favorite show, Mad Men, whatever it happens to be, and a call comes in for dad, and you know, the little five-year-old picks up the phone, answers the phone, and he's, Dad, you got a call, and he says, tell him I'm in the shower. And I sit back and I think to myself, how often are we training our children that if we don't like whatever the circumstance is, just lie about it? That's somehow okay. And boy, what a powerful imprint that teaches to a five-year-old that carries through their life.
It really is. And all these kids can relate to examples like that. Or you hear somebody bad-mouthing a friend of yours. Should you tell the friend? How should you respond to that? You know that someone's cheating on a test. What's the right way to respond to that? Kids deal with this all the time, just like adults do. And so it was really an honor to be able to write something for them. And it's funny, though, when it appears in China and Italy, the illustrations are different.
Oh, really?
Yes. And the cover for the American edition shows one child passing a note to another. But the Italian edition focuses on this frustrated teacher who can't get a grip on the unruly students in front of him.
Huh.
So the emphasis there is on the authority figure. It's funny how it reflects the cultural norms where the book is. But this Italian edition is beautiful. They did such an amazing job. And I got a letter from a parent recently saying, my 8-year-old daughter read your book and wants to know, Dr. Weinstein, are you a vegetarian?
Okay.
I don't even remember talking about that in the book. So I wonder, as Art Linkletter used to say, kids say the darndest things.
Oh, isn't that
remember
the truth?
That?
I absolutely do. And I think
some of your listeners remember it too.
Oh, I'm sure some of them do. You know, one thing, and I think you probably experience the same, is, you know, when you speak to a group of kids, that they will absolutely ask any question that's on their mind. And that's
yes.
the thing that I love as compared to the corporate audience, where people
yes.
are a little more restrained.
Sure. Yeah.
Look, in before we wrap things up, in a recent blog post, you mentioned there are three obstacles to doing the right thing. You said it's fear, focus on short-term benefits, and foul mood.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I have to say, I looked at that and I thought, that's interesting. But it seems like that focus on the short-term benefit thing is the primary problem we face in business today.
That's true. This obsession with doing well each quarter that can sometimes blind a company to looking beyond that. I mean, just look at Amazon, or I mean, to take an example in entertainment, look at the Seinfeld show. That show took a couple of years to find its voice, to find its footing, to find its audience. If the powers that be had looked at it after the first season and said, this isn't working, let's cancel it, imagine what the culture would have been deprived of.
Right.
They said, but you know, we're going to invest in this. We believe in this guy. We believe in this product, if you will, and we're going to stand behind it. And that's exactly what happened. And the results speak for themselves. And I understand the impulse, especially how competitive the world is, to look closely at the profits each quarter. But it can blind us to making right or good choices on behalf of the shareholders and on behalf of the product or service we're providing.
Well, it certainly can from a business perspective and also on a personal perspective, because, you know, if you look at children, if you look at our young people, they have different motivations and different talents and different skills. And if we judge everybody based upon just what you did this semester or the grade you happen to get in chemistry, that may not be the best judge to determine where that child's ability to shine is going to be.
Absolutely true. I couldn't agree with you more.
Well,
I will say that since I came up with the three F's, if you will,
uh-huh.
Of what gets in the way of doing the right thing, an audience member came up and added a fourth, and I think it's absolutely right on target. It's not having enough time. The pressure of time can sometimes narrow our focus and prompt us to make choices that we might not make if we had more time.
Yeah, that's true. And with the issue of time, we are now getting pretty close.
Oh, what a segue. I did not
show.
Even know that, setting that up.
You set me up so
look
well.
Look at that.
So look, let me do this. Let me encourage everyone that's listening to Straight Talk Radio here. Let me encourage you to pick up a copy of all of Bruce's books. I want to say this. I absolutely know that Ethical Intelligence is an outstanding book, but I also want to say if you're a parent and you're sitting there dealing with issues of how do I train my child to make those positive ethical choices, pick up the book that Bruce wrote, Is It Still Cheating If I Don't Get Caught? I think it would absolutely be worth it. And, of course, you can find all of Bruce's material at theethicsguy.com. Theethicsguy.com, or visit Amazon, or pick them up in a bookstore near you. And if you don't see them on the shelf, ask them. I'm sure they'll be able to get it for you. And certainly, if your organization,
my website, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that if they order through my website, I'll be happy to sign it, personalize it, if they'd like.
Ah, now that's even better. So go to theethicsguy.com. and pick up a copy of Bruce's books, and therefore you get signed copies. And if your organization is planning a powerful meeting that seeks an inspirational presenter and one that earns standing ovations time after time, visit Bruce Weinstein's website, The Ethics Guy, because I'm sure he welcomed the opportunity to talk to you. And Bruce, let me thank you so much for joining me. And to all our listeners, join us next week for more Straight Talk, transformational talk radio to live by. This is Chuck Gallagher. Tune in next week, and you won't want to miss our show. And remember, every choice has a consequence. Here's to the power of positive choices. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio.
You've been listening to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Tune in each week on TransformationTalkRadio.com each Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, as Chuck Gallagher, international speaker and author, cuts through the noise to share truth through transparency. Nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. Visit ChuckGallagher.com for more information and turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher.
Where do you desire to go in your life? Are you only looking outside yourself for the answers? What if you use your soul's wisdom to lead the way? So what is the soul, and how do you access its wisdom? Soul Suitcase with Victoria Cohen will unpack these questions and help you tap into and trust your own inner voice to solve everyday problems. Our Soul Suitcase is a treasure chest of wisdom inside us waiting to be discovered. Listen to Soul Suitcase while Victoria Cohen takes everyday situations like job loss, relationship struggles, parenting challenges, work stress, and health concerns, and shows you how awakening to your inner voice helps you make more conscious choices where your life flows more smoothly with greater clarity, purpose, grace, and ease. As a psychotherapist and soul coach, Victoria has inspired thousands of clients over the past 31 years to listen to their inner wisdom and let it guide them on their true path. You can learn this too on Soul Suitcase with Victoria Cohen. Your soul suitcase is packed. Are you ready to start your journey?
Used clinically by top Lyme doctors, Beyond Balance herbal formulas have helped thousands of patients battle tick-borne disease by providing superior immune system support and enhancing detoxification. Beyond Balance formulas are sold through healthcare professionals. The oral drops contain non-GMO food-grade vegetable glycerin, making them well-tolerated by children and alcohol-sensitive patients. For more information, licensed or certified healthcare practitioners can call BioResource, the exclusive Beyond Balance distributor for the United States and Canada, 800-203-3775.
Hello, my name is Dr. Friedman Schaub. Anxiety can attack or creep up on us at the most inopportune moments, which makes us feel powerless and out of control. However, anxiety is a basic feeling that is created by our mind. Understanding some do's and don'ts about anxiety is the first step to demystify this emotion and regain control. The more we know about a challenge, the more we can find ways to overcome it.
Tap into your I Am energy to discover who you truly are and who you always have been. Dawn Smith offers a simple yet profound and life-changing way to discover your I Am energy that is hidden beneath the toxicity caused by choices we made consciously or unconsciously prior to today. This internal perfection is not an idea, a theory, or some vague notion or concept. On the contrary, it is beyond the grasp of the brain and its intellectual interpretations, as it lies deep within the language of our hearts. Visit iamenergy.ca.
Hello, my name is Dr. Friedman Schaub. Anxiety can attack or creep up on us at the most inopportune moments, which makes us feel powerless and out of control. However, anxiety is a basic feeling that is created by our mind. Understanding some do's and don'ts about anxiety is the first step to demystify this emotion and regain control. The more we know about a challenge, the more we can find ways to overcome it.